trained together for decades, and each of their strikes was as perfectly coordinated and lethal as if it came from a four-armed warrior. My only advantage was that I had trained with them as well and could anticipate most of their movements. I could not fend them off forever. One of every six attacks they made slipped past my defense. The rock was now slick with my blood. I dove back off the boulder and flipped over before colliding with the rocky edge of the riverbank. Thayer was behind me in an instant, but Alexia threw three small daggers down at me. Two sunk into my right thigh before I could sprint away. I gritted my teeth against the pain and pivoted to dodge another pair of horizontal slashes from Thayer. My leg was suddenly numb. Alexia's daggers were coated with the same poison she favored on her arrowheads. If I had half a minute to recover, I could have ripped out the blades and healed, but my magic was already struggling with the countless wounds across my body. Thayer knew. He timed his sword strikes to keep my right hand from yanking the blades from my flesh. Alexia paced around Thayer and I like a puma readying for the kill. I tried to keep both of my ex-generals in front of me, but my mobility was hampered by her poison, and Thayer suddenly doubled the speed of his attacks to hold my attention. The chill from my leg spread up to my hips and stomach. I had been close to death so many times, but I always found some way to save myself. There would be no escape this time. I didn't hear Alexia, but I sensed her attack and turned to face her. Thayer anticipated my movement, and his sword cut off my left arm at the elbow, sending the remainder of my limb and Gorbani's heavy sword skipping across the rocky river like a dancing marionette. Alexia's short blade pierced my chest below the heart, and I felt the air explode from my lungs in a wet gasp. Her ice-blue eyes stared into mine, but they were filled with hatred instead of their usual kindness. I swung my right arm across to punch her in the face, but her second sword ripped into my bicep, and I grunted the remaining air out of my dying body. Then, the battle was over. I struggled to raise my head, but my muscles would not move. I felt numb everywhere, and even though the earth screamed through my body like an angry hawk, there was too much blood pouring out of me to keep me conscious. If they pulled the blade out of my chest, I could heal in a few minutes, but they would not. This could only end one way. I've asked this before, but I'll ask one last time. If you ever loved me, loved us, you'll explain why you did such horrible things. Why did you betray us? Malik's voice filled my ears, and I found that I had just enough strength to raise my head and look at him. I loved her. I was surprised at how light my body felt. If Thayer wasn't holding me down, I would probably float away into the sky. The idea sounded wonderful. I wanted to be free to jump through the clouds. Malik shook his head and sighed. I saw the muscles of his jaw clench when he pulled his sword from the weapon's sheath. The movement was quick, or maybe my mind was just so tired that I couldn't follow their attacks anymore. The surest way to kill one of our kind, or an elven, was to separate the head from the body. Malik's aim was true. You'll stay dead this time, Kyair. Chapter 20. Kyair. I startled awake with a scream and fought to keep my breath in my lungs. I felt my head split in two and fall away from my body onto the rocky ground of the river shore, while Malik's angry face glared at me from above the horizon. His sword was covered in my blood and dripped into the water that snaked through the gorge like an angry worm. But I was alive. How was that possible? What is wrong? Fehalda stood with her blade drawn across the campfire. Virnine crouched in a battle stance with her own weapon poised to defend. Both women were naked, and the red flames reflected off of their athletic bodies with a slick sheen. Bad dream, I gasped, and forced air down my throat with a savage gulp. My head still felt as if it was split down the middle by Malik's sword. You screamed loud enough to wake the dead gods, Virnine frowned slightly, and I couldn't tell if the pewter-haired woman was joking or not. Her red eyes reflected the firelight like angry lava. Perhaps it was a bad nightmare, then? I sighed, and tossed aside my own blanket. The night was hot, but the sweat that covered my body felt like ice and smelled of terror. "Where are you going?" Fehalda asked when I stood and took a few steps away from the campsite and into the darkness of the night. "To piss and then rinse off in the river. If you want, you can handle my penis and wash my back," I said over my shoulder at the white elven. "Pff," she huffed, and I heard both of their swords return to their sheaths with a single sound. After I relieved myself in a thick grouping of rosemary, I pulled off my sweaty undergarments and walked the 60 yards to the bank of the river. We had followed it west for the last week toward Naya. It was the same river I had emerged into after escaping the dragon's lair. Closer to the capital, it was known as the Stone River. The shores of the river were lined in slick rocks. I waded into the quick-moving water. Though the air was hot and dry, the water was still quite frigid. I doubted most would be able to stand more than a few moments in its icy clutches. I dunked my head under the surface and let the black current numb my body and memories until my breath couldn't be held any more. It was not a nightmare. The realization brought the chill to my heart and stomach. My friends really did chase me down like a rabid beast and murder me. I could remember the pain of their weapons, and I saw their faces so clearly. They meant to kill me. My friends hated me for some reason, and it was not because of what I did to Shlara. I must have done something else to incur such wrath, something that prompted them to chase me themselves instead of sending soldiers after me as they had in the past. My head ached when I tried to remember. What more could I have done? What could have been worse than what I did to Shlara? They had tied Iola Rothi to a stake and began to burn her. I was bound and powerless. I could not stop them. I could only watch the woman I loved die at the hands of my friends. Kaer. I thought it was Iola Rothi's voice for a moment. I was so absorbed in the memory of her beautiful face, twisting in agony as she burned. I turned and saw Fehalda at the river's muddy shore. You've been standing in the river for an hour. Neither you nor Virnine has come to wash my back. I gave a short laugh and walked to the shore. It is your watch. She glanced at my naked body when I emerged from the water, but I imagine she was more interested in the numerous scars that decorated my skin than the sexual gratification I could grant her. She had made it clear, on more than one occasion during our week of travel, that she would butcher me if I even considered touching her. "Fine, go to sleep," I said, as we walked back to the camp. She glared at me and then walked to her bedroll without another word. "Do you wish to speak of your nightmare?" Virnine asked from her bedroll. Her red eyes regarded me seriously. "No." I sat down on a rock next to the fire and stared into the parts of the flame that matched her eyes. "I can only imagine your plans for our return, but I doubt the Empress will understand if you choose to be so terse with her. I will deal with her when we meet. That is exactly the kind of language that makes me question your intent, that and your long and legendary history of decimating our people," she replied. "What do you recommend?" I turned away from the fire and glared at her. Vir-9 rarely revealed any emotion, and she made no indication now that she understood she was irritating me. "We will return to Naya with you. General Fahalda will beseech her sister to meet with you again, since you saved both of our lives. The Empress will ask us what you wish to speak of, and we will not have an answer. You are the destroyer, the scourge of our people, the betrayer of your own. She will never agree to meet with you. She will likely unleash her army upon you again. You've already told me all of this. If you will explain to us what you want, what you will offer, and why the Empress should trust you, we will have a better chance of success in negotiating with my sister on your behalf," Fahalda said from her bedroll. Unlike Vir-9, Fahalda's voice and face clearly conveyed her exasperation. "I wish to keep it private between the two of us. We will both be in the room. We will find out then," Vir-9 sighed. "I will only speak to her alone." "You are so fucking stubborn," Fahalda swore. Our eyes met across the fire, and I could not mistake the malice there. "I owe you for saving our lives, but if not for you, our lives never would have been in danger. I will not allow my sister to spend any time alone with you. I do not trust you. If you want our help, if you really want to speak with her, you will tell us exactly what you want so that we may prepare her." "We want to help you," Vir-9 said. "Give us what we need to set up this meeting." Fahalda nodded at the gray woman's words. We had argued about my plan almost every hour as we traveled to the capital. I felt my resolve crumbling under their constant assault. If I told them, the Empress might give her answer directly to the women and refuse to speak to me. This would put a bend in my plan, but I would still be in the castle and could devise a new course then. "Fine, I will tell you." Even Vir-9 looked shocked, but they quickly regained their composure before I continued. "I have holes in my memories. I don't remember everything, and the memories do not return chronologically. I have slowly been able to piece together the different parts of my past, but when I first awoke, I did not even know my name. Talaxthi studied the destroyer. I want her help understanding the missing pieces of my other life." They didn't speak for a few seconds, but I saw them glance sideways at each other. The firelight reflected off of their eyes, and I realized that other than Vir-9's eyes, both of them were colorless shades of black, white, and gray. "What would you offer in return for her assistance?" Vir-9 leaned forward in her bedding, and the fabric fell away from her shoulders to expose most of her chest and breasts. Our travel so far had been uneventful, but the movement made my body recall the many nights I spent licking every inch of her white skin and fucking her while Islata watched or participated. "What do you think she would want?" "So, you don't even know what you would offer?" Fahalda let out an exasperated sigh. "I have some ideas, but if you both are sincere about wanting to help, then tell me what she wants. You know her better." "She wants you gone from this world. That was the whole reason Vir-9 and I came after you at Naya's East Keep." "I am not leaving this world." I met her black eyes. "What else?" "You could show us which radical you came from," Vir-9 offered. "Perhaps." I wondered if Nadia had already told the Empress everything. Maybe Vir-9 and Fahalda didn't even know that Nadia was Talaxthi's daughter. They must have left the castle immediately after the Duchess's capture. That is not enough. She wants him gone, by way of the Radical or death, Fehalda said flatly. Because she fears me? I asked. Both women closed their mouths and glanced at each other. Like two sides of a mirror, they licked their lips slightly, and then each ran a hand through her hair. My army had a silent hand language, and I wondered if the Empress's army had a similar mode of communication. "How did you get your armor?" Viernine asked suddenly. "Armor?" I felt my body chill, despite the heat in the air. "Yes, the destroyer's armor, your armor. It emerged from your body as if your skin was merely covering it the entire time. And the destroyer's mace and shield were in your hands. I would not have believed it if I had not seen your transformation with my own eyes." Fehalda sat up in her bedroll, but made a more conscious effort to cover her body than Viernine. I don't remember. My head was starting to hurt again, and my stomach felt queasy. I recalled bits and pieces of that night after I found Jesme, but they didn't make much sense. 432 of our warriors died that night, trying to protect our Empress. Yet we bring you back to her now. Perhaps she will think us traitors. At the very least, she will punish us for failing in our mission to banish you from this world. The white woman shook her head, and her pale, long hair danced with various shades of orange, reflecting the firelight. So why are you bringing me back to her? How do you not remember wearing your armor? Fehalda seethed. It makes my head hurt to think of it. A headache like something is splitting my skull open, I admitted. It must be your conscience, forcing atonement for the horrors you have inflicted on hundreds of thousands of people. She clenched her teeth and then looked away from me and into the fire. I sighed and settled back down in my blankets. We would have another discussion tomorrow while we traveled, then at night, then the next day, all the way until we reached Naya again. Fehalda was probably correct. Talaxthi would not want to be anywhere near me. I did not understand how my armor had returned to me. It must have been some magic beyond my comprehension. Stranger things had happened. I was still alive now, 5,000 years after being beheaded by my friend. I grew up happy. My mouth formed the words as I looked up to the stars and twin moons. I didn't recognize them, but I knew now why they were so alien to me. I never met my mother. My father would not speak of her. She was killed by our elven masters because she made a mistake. I heard the women turn in their bedrolls, but I didn't look at them. My father, brother, and I ran the blacksmith and stables for the chieftain's house. There were other stables on the estate, but ours were the only ones she ever visited. I was terrified of her at first. Everyone feared her, every human, every elven. She delighted in their terror, and they fawned over her like idiotic butterflies. I worked all night, making sure that the stables were spotless and the horses were groomed to perfection. She killed humans almost daily, and I once saw her rip the limbs from a horse that had managed to throw her from its back. She was a terrible force of nature that was as beautiful as she was deadly. I probably loved her before she even noticed me. I loathed your kind, but I had been lucky and escaped any real beatings or lashings. When she did notice me, I feared she would torture me at length before she murdered me. The thought of my brother and father missing me was almost more painful than the thought of actually dying at her hands. I looked over at the women and saw them studying me with eyes that reflected the campfire like metal. When we became lovers, It was wonderful. I had never known such intimacy could exist. I had never felt anything more incredible than her body. She taught me to please her, and I was more than eager to do so. We kept our affair hidden. I don't know how long we were together, but I wanted it to last forever. I saw Iola Rothi's face again in my memories, and recalled the first time we had made love. I heard her moans of pleasure, and the feeling of her beautiful body wrapped around my own. "What happened?" Fahalda asked, and I realized it had been half a minute since I spoke. One of her suitors found out about us. My brother was helping me shoe a stallion. I was in the smithy getting a tool for him. The group of them came upon our building and yanked my brother out. She strangled him while I watched from the doorway. My father ran out to save him, but her suitors stabbed him. I ran to their dead bodies. I thought she would kill me, and I wanted her to. The tribe was experimenting on humans. They were using magic to change them into something more powerful. She sent me there. They infused us with the elements and locked us in cages for weeks in the dark in our own filth. Most died. The few who lived were trained as warriors. I thought of her all the time, but I only wanted revenge. I had loved her with every fiber of my existence, and she killed my family. I hated myself almost as much as I hated her. Eventually, my friend and I orchestrated an escape. We freed others, and we fled. We lived in the shadows of the world and tried to scrape out an existence, but Laxiel continued to pursue us. We made it to the other side of the world, and they gave up the chase. We built an army, a monster of humans, whose sole purpose was to destroy their enslavers. My story was only unique because I loved the elven who had betrayed me. All of my warriors had lost loved ones. All of us had been tortured, raped, humiliated. All of us had lived like animals at the hands of your people. It was easy enough to harness their pain and rage into something productive. It was easy to motivate them with the promise of freedom. I believed I wanted to be free of elven enslavement, but I just wanted to be free of her. I wanted revenge, and I was willing to destroy everything to have it. She knew this. She told me when we met before the final battle. Before the dragons descended, she asked for my surrender. She told me she still loved me, and she begged for forgiveness. She offered a truce. "You refused," Fehalda grunted. "I know this story. Every single elven is taught how that battle ended." "Of course I refused. I could not surrender after we had driven them to the brink of extinction. I could not surrender after promising thousands of my people a life of freedom. I could not surrender when the blood of countless humans had been spilled through generations by your people. I could not surrender when we were so close to victory." Then the dragons came. My army killed two of them, and the last one flew into the sky in an attempt to flee. I hung on to her talon, but was thrown off. When I awoke, my lover had found me. I did not want them to know the details of how I had defeated the dragons. We made love again. My memories are still filled with holes, but I believe that it was the last time. I forgave her, and she forgave me. We planned to flee into the wilderness to spend the rest of our lives together. Perhaps it was a foolish dream. I recalled the last union of our bodies and wondered again at the child we had created. This was what I needed to Laxthi's help with, but I had to tread carefully. Shlara discovered us. She loved me, and I loved her as much as I was capable. I had made a promise to end the Elvens and build a new life with her. But when she saw the choice I had made, she flew into a rage. I know the pain I caused her. I betrayed her. I betrayed all of our people. She must have felt the same way I did when Iola Rothi killed my family. Your story is a lie, a falsehood from a deranged fool. There is no part of your tale that is true other than the destroyer not accepting her offer of truce before that last battle. Iola Rothi never even fought directly against Shlara. Fahalda was shaking slightly, and her face looked pained. Maybe part of her actually believed me. You want to know what I will speak to your sister about. This is my story. You might not believe that Shlara attacked her, or that Iola Rothi and I were lovers, or any of this, but my memories are almost complete, and I know their truth. I tried to stop Shlara from attacking. Iola Rothi was skilled in combat, but Shlara was much stronger. She was our most skilled warrior. Just as Shlara was about to make a fatal strike against Iola Rothi, I intervened. I acted without thinking, and my magic killed Shlara. Iola Rothi escaped, and I waited to face Malak when he rode to rescue us. I do not know what happened then. I only remember searching for Iola Rothi for a dozen or more years while my own people hunted me. Eventually, we were both captured. I recall little after that. Then I was awoken by the people on this world. They wanted someone to save them from the ancients conquering their planet. If I had awoken, fully aware of my past, perhaps I could have approached the situation differently, but your Empress also admitted making mistakes when she first came here. I do not believe that Iola Rothi and you were lovers. It is impossible. Fahalda seethed with more hate than I had ever heard in her voice. She sacrificed her offspring for one chance to save our people. She was the only leader who ever had success against your army. She was your enemy, and you were hers. She never would have loved you. Sacrificed her offspring? I asked. I thought my heart had mended, but I suddenly felt jealous that she had mated with one of her own kind and made other children. It was foolish, and I quickly pushed the emotions away. I will not speak of it. Perhaps my sister will wish to tell you, if she even cares to speak to you. Your story was quite compelling, but I sense it was also full of other lies and half-truths. You'll say whatever you think will get you close to my sister so you can murder her. Fahalda sighed and lay back down in her bedroll. I will honor my promise to you and ask her to see you, but I am against it and will tell her so. It does not matter what I say. She will still kill you. My sister cares about all of her kin you have murdered, but Islata was not a mere soldier. She was a gift from our dead gods, and a sign that we would be victorious against your people. She will not forgive you for Islata's death. I accept that. I cared for Islata, and did not wish to harm her. But you did, Virnine said softly. Now she is dead, and our entire race will mourn for a lifetime. I did not know what to say to either of them. I closed my eyes and wished the conversation could end. Sharing my story had not convinced them of my sincerity or changed their opinions of me. Perhaps they could sense what I wanted better than I could. Killing Talaxthi would fix almost everything. My entire life was death and violence. What was one more life? But I was weary of the bloodshed. I could not undo the destruction I had wrought, but I wanted my future free of it. I thought of Jesme's dream of running a farm and building a family together, and it warmed my heart and made me long to hold her close to me again. I thought of Nadia's wonderful description of living in the keep and overseeing the eastern part of Naya. The idea of spending my days with her, my nights, engaged in debate and discussion with her and her father, filled me with peace. Our kind has been killing each other for much longer than I have been alive. I can apologize for the death I have caused, but it began before me and continued after. I never wanted to become this destroyer. I would have been happy to stay in the stables with my father, brother, and Iola Rothi. Our people have been battling since the dawn of time, I said. No. Your people have chosen to forget the truth of our past. We once lived together in peace. But you are right that the violence and death existed before you, Viernine responded. In the distant past, perhaps tens of thousands of years before your war with us, humans and our people coexisted and served our shared gods. I do not believe your legends, and yet they are true, whether you believe them or not. Elvens served humans. We had a closer connection to the gods. We were created to serve you. The ancient humans called themselves the Obarni, and they had exponentially more power than your warriors. They challenged the gods, and we all paid the price for their hubris. Our ways were lost. Our gods were killed. The Obarni were cast down from their role as masters, and our people were forced to take over to protect our worlds. Fahalda said the words without her usual venom. She looked distracted and licked her lips repeatedly while she spoke. So that is how you justify the enslavement of an entire people? Oppression is always justified by the oppressors. The Obarni enslaved the Elvens because the gods created us for that purpose. Farmers enslave their livestock because they believe themselves superior and deserving. Your people currently subjugate ours because of the past. The same cycle is repeated. Only the roles change. Fahalda's voice lowered to an angry hiss, and she turned north as she finished speaking. "Do you smell that?" she asked Viernine. "Yes. Human. Familiar," the pewter-haired woman whispered. "I inhaled through my own nose and caught the scent of a distant human or two, but the breeze was blowing from the southeast, and the river muted most of the surrounding sounds. I didn't think that the three of us had anything to fear, but Fehalda's sudden caution caused me to worry." Viernine clicked her tongue against her lips to get my attention, and she tossed me the pair of swords I had salvaged during the battle with the lizard spiders. The women had been uncomfortable with me carrying the weapons, so I had turned them over to ease their fears. Holding the blades in my hands instantly calmed me, and I almost smiled at the irony of the three of us readying weapons to fight against an unknown intruder. "Who?" a voice cried out from the other side of the water. It sounded friendly, and I was tempted to return the call, but Fahalda answered instead. "Identify yourself," she called out into the darkness. I could see a lighter silhouette against the darker background of the riverbank. "We saw your campfire. Might we trouble you for directions? I noticed half a dozen other figures emerge and wade into the river." Fehalda drew one of her swords, and Viernine followed. I debated drawing my own blades, but realized the effort was futile. Three of us versus even 30 humans would have been an easy victory. But these were not humans. They were Obarni. There were actually 14 shapes in the water. They easily swam across the river and emerged on our side with little more than a whisper of sound. "Hello, Fahalda. It has been many years." Their leader was a woman. She was tall and sinewy, with chiseled muscles underneath tawny skin that dripped smooth with the water. Her hair was a light brown with a bit of curl that was bound up over her head in a series of intricate ties laced with glass beads. Her facial features were sharp and hawk-like. She was beautiful. She carried an air of danger and ferocity about her that was enticing. Her eyes were an odd shade of light blue, and that, along with the familiar bear tattoo on her exposed shoulder, helped me guess her identity. Her arrival could not possibly lead to a good outcome for Talaxthi or myself. "Greetings, Ternia." The Empress's sister glanced at the other Obarni warriors. She sheathed her sword. "It has been many years. Why have you come to this world? Have you spoken to the Empress yet?" I was surprised at Fahalda's sudden pleasantness. "I have come for my brother. He journeyed here at the request of one of my kinsmen, but has not returned." Ternia stopped talking and fixed her eyes on the two elven women. Silence seemed to echo through our tiny campground, with only the crackling of our small fire and the dripping of the Obarni warriors to accompany the tension. "Well," Ternia said, when the silence was the thickest. "Well," Fahalda crossed her arms over her chest. She may have intended the motion to convey confidence, but it only seemed to emphasize that all three of us were clothed only in our undergarments, and the 14 Obarni wore decorated leather and chain armor. "Have you seen Kanneth?" Ternia may have been annoyed, but much like her late brother, she was adept at keeping her emotions in check. "There is a castle to the west, if you follow this river about 60 miles. Our armies are camped outside of the wall. She will receive you if you journey there." Fahalda tapped her fingers on the alabaster skin of her right bicep. "Where is your army?" Ternia glanced around the campsite, but didn't seem to notice me standing to the side. Her other warriors were ignoring me as well, though I carried the sheathed swords in my hand. "They are back at the castle," Fahalda answered, and I almost winced. The reply had been a bit hasty. "You are one of Talaxthi's elites?" Ternia turned her head to Virnine, and a lock of hair fell over one of her blue eyes. The powerful woman didn't move to brush it away. "Yes, I am Virnine. I may have heard the name before. I am not one to pursue notoriety." Virnine licked her lips with the tip of her tongue and glanced at the weapons the warriors carried. A few had axes, the rest had curved heavy swords, all of them had short bows. "Perhaps that is wise for one of your kind." Ternia chuckled slightly, and the dark, husky sound was alluring and intimidating at the same time. I could easily understand how this woman came to lead her own clan. So the Empress's most capable general, who also happens to be her sister, and one of her elite warriors are out in the wilderness together, 60 miles from the closest army. Ternia may have intended the sentence to be a question, but she stated it as the fact that it was. I guessed where the woman would be going next with her line of questioning, but it was probably too late for me to run. "Yes, we are heading back. My sister asked us to scout this country's eastern territory." "That is convenient for us, then. We will accompany you. But first, I have one last question." Ternia looked at me, and her warriors mirrored her gaze. She raised her hand slowly and pointed a long finger at me from across the fire. "Who is this?" The woman finally smiled, and her teeth shone a reflective white against the firelight.
Chapter 21. My Elarathi. I carry terrible news. Ripley's face was ashen, and he stank of rotten tomatoes mixed with shit. The handsome man's clothes were ripped, burnt, and crusted with a mixture of salt and mud. It had been almost 2 months since I had seen my former suitor, and he looked worse for wear. The armor practically hung about him, as if it was made for someone two sizes larger. "Speak," I sighed and gestured absently with my hand. He tugged on his dark copper hair and then glanced to his father, Vuma. Riffy must have sensed the change in the air since he left our tribal lands. My father's audience hall was missing its luxurious table and leather chairs. In their place were oak workstations, sturdy stools, and endless maps of the known territory of our world. Only one of the plush chairs remained. I sat in it while the elders and my father stood. "We lost the main group of humans in the Ridge Forest, but caught the trail of the two men we believed to be their leaders. We chased them north for 4 weeks and cornered them at the foothills before the Utaro Mountains. Then we were ambushed, and everyone was killed." The elders around me screamed with a mixture of disappointment, fear, and disbelief. Their stench almost made me gag, and their idiotic babble forced me to bite my lip. "Shut the fuck up!" I shouted at them while I clenched the sides of my chair. The armrest crumbled to fragments in my fist, and they quieted as if I had just crushed their collective throats. "Who ambushed you?" I kept my voice calm. I doubted that Riffy's group of hunters had actually tracked Kyair, but it was possible. I hated to think that the fourth attempt to capture him and his escaped kin had also failed. "It was a man. A human. He came down from the foothills and wielded impossible magic." Riffy quivered in his place. The man was beyond exhausted. I had never traveled to the Utaro Mountains, but they were in the far distant north. If he made it back here in only 4 weeks, he probably had not slept. "A single human killed your entire squad of 30 hunters." "Yes." He bowed his head. Anger continued to fill my chest and stomach. It had been mistake after fucking mistake with this human army. I scratched my nails across the armrest of my chair and contemplated my next decision. What I really wanted to do was put my face in my hands and scream. Why? Why had Kyair escaped the day before Vertaris and I were going to take his squad out into the field? Why had it been next to impossible for our hunters to capture them? Why did Kyair continue to elude me? I should have found a way to speak to him. He had no way of knowing that I wanted us to escape together. He only knew that we were hunting him. I suddenly regretted killing Vertaris. After his third botched attempt to capture his escaped humans and fix the state of our tribe, I had lost my patience in a sudden burst of finality that left his head parted from his neck. The man had tried his best, I assumed, but the results would not protect this tribe or my fate. If he had been alive now, I might have asked him if we had any chance of capturing our lost and magically empowered humans. I could guess his answer. "What of Kuntanya?" Elden Yella's daughter led half of the group of trackers, while Riffy commanded the other. "Dead, but not by the newcomer's magic. One of the two men we were chasing threw an axe that found her head." Riffy bowed his head again in defeat while Yella let out a soft cry of grief. The other elders quickly joined her in voicing their sorrows. I sighed and put my hand to my face. Kuntanya had beaten out my other suitors and returned with the bloody carcass of the carrion beast. It was the beginning of a sexually pleasant endeavor that had dulled the ache I felt from Kyair's loss. "Get some rest now, my son. We will discuss this more tomorrow," Vuma said, and Riffy nodded. "No." I held a finger up, and the gathered elders stopped their keening. Riffy halted his retreat and raised an eyebrow at me. I could carry some of the blame for losing Kyair. If I had been more careful with our trysts, Riffy would not have seen me and started the rumor that eventually forced me to kill Kyair's family. Still, I put most of the blame on Riffy. I had always wanted an excuse to kill him. Kyair was gone, and I had no reason left to keep him alive. This is an unacceptable failure. I rose and felt the elders slide away from me a bit. Their fear tasted sweeter than Riffy's. "No, please." Vuma was once haughty enough to argue with me, but in the last few months he witnessed what my displeasure wrought enough times to respect my power. "You have other descendants, Vuma." My sword slid out of its sheath with a silky whisper. Ripti's eyes widened, and I think he actually tried to move away, but he was much too slow and tired. The point of my blade pierced his skull right in the center of his nose and came out the other end. His body crumpled into a pile in the middle of the room. This improved my mood. Now there are no loose ends. I turned to the elders and my father. The scent of their fear mixed with the scent of Ripti's corpse on the ground behind me. The humans have escaped. Our experiment has failed. It is time to move on. I walked toward Vuma, and the elder male made a small step to shy away from me. We can hope that these humans will simply fall victim to the wilderness, and there will never be another scent of them. What do you think of that possibility, Vuma? He walked into my broken chair and stumbled over it. Yes, they will probably perish in the wilderness, as you have said. His body reeked of rotten cabbage. No, you idiot! I smacked him in the forehead with the palm of my hand like I was scolding a horse. These humans could raise another army, as in our legends. They will come after us for the generations of slavery we have inflicted upon their people. We will be butchered like cattle. Their old faces crinkled in concern. The most probable outcome lies somewhere between those two extremes. Likely they will raise a small army and be destroyed by another elven tribe. If a human is captured alive, they may tell of our involvement. There will be an investigation, and we will be forced to go to war with our own kind instead of these humans.
So how should we proceed?
My father asked.
The stress of this missing human army wore on him like 100 years, and he looked as weathered as the elders who advised him.
I knew this was the possibility he feared the most. Every elven or human who had any direct dealings with this army is either dead by human hand or my own. I turned to regard Ripti's discarded body and wished I had done it sooner. If there is an investigation, the other tribes cannot prove anything. Preparing for an eventual attack would be just as obvious as admitting guilt. We should continue operating our family lands as if nothing has changed. They nodded at my words and calmed their sense.
If nothing has changed, then you will be required to choose a mate, preferably from another neighboring tribe, so we can strengthen those relationships and have an ally in case of this investigation.
Vuma practically spat the words. Yes, I realize that I will now have limited options for a mate, thanks to all of your failures. I glared at the group, and they seemed to cower in fear. They should have been afraid of me. In the last few months, I'd disposed of most of the human garbage that had not escaped with Kaer.
When will you choose?
My father asked. I will announce it tomorrow. It had been difficult to keep the women and men from the other tribes in the dark, and they were even angrier with my disappearance over the last several months.
Very good.
My father nodded, and the other elders seemed more than relieved. This was what they wanted. Safety and success through my loins. I fought the urge to unleash the world's magic into the room and roast every one of them to cinders. I will retire to my suite now. Let us make the announcement tomorrow at dinner. Do not disturb me before then. I turned and walked out of the meeting room and did my best to control the scent of my anger. The servants in the manor let me know that I did a poor job of it. They fled from my footsteps like scared roaches. What happened? Rilyata opened the door to my suite and ushered me inside. Rifi and Kuntanya are dead, as are their hunters. The humans have escaped for good, and there will be no further attempts at apprehending them. I walked to the back of the foyer and began to sort through the rack of weapons I had displayed there. I had already secreted away most of my hunting equipment and camping supplies.
What will become of us?
Nothing. It is doubtful that the other tribes will find out Lexiel ever performed these experiments. The only elvens alive who know anything of it are my father, his elders, you, and me. I selected 2 additional swords from the rack that my sister had gifted to me many years ago, and walked with them into my bedroom.
What of your brother?
He knew we were doing something in the fields, but never dug into the matter. You will give him this note after I leave. Then you will journey to my mother's lands and give this other one to my sister. Perhaps he will join you on your trip. I pulled 3 sealed letters from my dresser drawer and handed them to the beautiful woman.
I am not going with you?
Well, Yara's voice cracked, and I tasted the sour lemon of her disappointment in the air between us.
No, lover. I need you to deliver that letter.
My sister will require your efforts, and she will be kinder to you than I have ever been.
I wrapped the blades in a blanket and then began to shift through the drawers of my dresser for undergarments. I've packed our belongings already. Relyadar pointed to four large leather packs that sat in the corner of the room. This third letter is for me? She held up the white envelope with her name written upon the front. Yes, they will ask you where I went. You will say that I disappeared in the night and only left you that single letter. They will read it and believe I am traveling north. I walked over to the leather bags and picked the first one up from the wood floor. But you won't be going north? Relyadar raised an eyebrow. Another reason I wish you to visit my sister is because we communicate through a complex code. I've told her where I am planning on being in that letter, but she is the only one who can decipher it. I caught the scent of burnt flowers from her body. It mixed with the lemon scent in an unusual way. I won't ever see you again, will I? The smell of her sadness filled the room, and her tears made her beautiful features glisten. I do not know what my future holds, but I will not be a slave to our race. I'm not a human. Don't I deserve my freedom? No one is free, Ayelorathi. We are all slaves to the ones we love and the ones we hate. She wiped her blue eyes and moved to retrieve two of the bags from the floor. Goodbye, Relyadar. Goodbye, Ayelorathi. Our fingers intertwined, and I couldn't help but remember the countless hours we had spent as lovers. Relyadar was smart, cunning, beautiful, and loyal. I was surprised at how sad I felt about leaving her. I am sorry. The words came without thinking. I was cruel to you when first we met, and I am being cruel to you now. You have always been there for me, and I appreciate that more than I ever told you. If I felt it was safe for you to come with me, you would. She seemed shocked at my words, and her scent quickly changed to one of ripe peaches. Thank you, mistress. I shall pray to the dead gods that your sister will treat me well, and that I will one day see you again. I grabbed the packs and slung them over my shoulders. Then I took one last stroll through the suite that I had called home for the past 6 years, before exiting to the patio. I dropped from my veranda silently and slipped down the hillside like a liquid shadow. I had already prepared most of my gear, and it lay hidden in the stables. Once I was in the hayloft, I uncovered the packs and supplies from the spot where Kyair and I had made love. His scent still lingered there. The memory of him never really left my mind, and I wondered if I would ever be free of the love I felt for the human. Even now my desires seemed to flood my senses with the thoughts of our time together. I would never see him again. I felt the bitterness of guilt as I realized that Relyadar must have been experiencing the same hollow hopelessness about losing me. I wished I had never encountered the human. We would both be better off. He would still be happily working in the stables. I would have chosen a mate by now and been carrying a pair of powerful children who would be the hope of their generation. My parents would be pleased. The elders would be confident in the strength of their tribe. Everyone would be at peace. Instead, I had created chaos and death in my selfish pursuit of my own desires. Yet, if I were somehow again at the crossroads, knowing what I now knew about the consequences of our relationship, I still would have chosen the path to him. I loaded up the mules and saddled one of my favorite horses. It was a stout animal that could ride for days without rest. Exactly the one my trackers would expect me to take. The idea of trackers finding me was almost laughable. The best had already been killed by Kyair's companions. None of those left alive would have the skill to find me. I rode out of the stables with my pack animals in tow. The green moon was just a sliver, but it threw enough light for me to navigate to the outskirts of the fields and into the forested grove that ran alongside the river. The scents of the grass, trees, and moist, gentle wind brought up rather fond memories. I had expected the stay here to be a horrible experience, though still preferable to living with my mother. I had not expected to enjoy the presence of my suitors and handmaidens. I had not expected to make a true friend of a servant. I had most definitely not expected to become a human's lover. Even a single-born could not predict the future.
Ho! Ho!
The voice called to me from the bank of the river, the same place from which Kyaer and his humans had fled. Leaving by boat seemed beyond the skill of a normal human, and I wondered if Kyaer had orchestrated the plan. Hello, human. The man was tall, a twisted willow tree. He smelled of pine needles, mint, and lemons. Greetings, mistress. He bowed low at the waist, and his light hair touched the smooth stones of the riverbank.
If it pleases you, you may call me Wark.
I care not for your name, Bard. I only care for your methods. I looked at the swiftly flowing water and felt anger burn in my stomach. Where is this boat you promised me?
It is concealed in the foliage over yonder.
He raised a stick arm to point to my right and bobbed his skeleton head with a cooing sound. The traveling minstrel was odd, even for a human. Rolyara alerted me to his unauthorized presence a few years ago. Once upon a time I would have just killed such a parasite, but I knew that I might one day need to escape. I made a deal with him to allow him to continue his travels through our lands unmolested, in return for news and assistance, in the event I would need to leave without a trace. Excellent. Prepare the vessel for me. I dismounted and began to take my bags off of the pack mules.
Yes, mistress.
I heard him scurry around behind a group of branches, and then he tugged a sleek-looking canoe out of the thicket. For the next 5 minutes, the gangly human helped me move half of the supplies from the mules to the canoe. Each bag made the small rowboat sink deeper into the river, and I wondered if the vessel would be safe out in the ocean.
Is that everything, mistress?
He asked once he placed the last bag.
Yes. Now review your instructions.
This part of my plan was outside my realm of control, and I felt uneasy leaving it to the human.
I am to take this horse and these mules south for 400 miles to the Kilor lands. There I will sell them, keep the profit, and disappear into their slave workforce for a few months.
He stood at attention and repeated the words with his fist over his heart as if he were saluting.
Good. You have packed enough supplies for me.
He opened one of the packs to find the duplicate camping equipment. His idiotic question made me want to smack his loose-looking head until it flew from his shoulders.
Yes, you should leave immediately. I've already laid tracks heading in all directions, but they might only follow those for a week until the ruse is discovered.
Then they will come after you.
Oh, your concern warms my heart. You are actually quite nicer than he is.
What are you speaking of, human? I reminded myself that I needed the Sklad alive to throw the trackers off of my tail.
Oh, nothing, mistress, speaking to myself, is all. Sometimes I wonder if we really understand this world of ours and the lives we come into contact with. For example, let us assume that you could kill the person you hated the most, but that choice would also kill the one you loved the most. Would you want that?
I got into the boat and found the oars. You should go now. I have to push you off. He moved to the boat's stern and gave a weak push while grunting.
But if you could kill the person you hate the most, would you?
I don't care for this conversation and am becoming annoyed with you.
Ah, so maybe I would be the person you hated.
He hooted with pleasure and gave another push on the boat that created absolutely no movement.
But then your love would die. I don't think it would be worth it.
My love is lost to me anyway. Move out of the way. I got out of the boat and took the skinny human's place at the stern. The boat moved easily with my strength and gently slid back into the water.
But is he dead? Would you wish him dead?
No, of course not. I love him. Why are you asking these questions? I waded knee-deep into the water and jumped into the canoe with little fuss.
I figured as much. Like I said earlier, you are a nice elven. What if the person you loved was also the person you hated? What would you do then?
He bobbled his head sideways like a bug was trying to fly into his ear. Before he could react, I grabbed onto his thin neck and pulled him out of the water. I held his dangling body in the air while he gasped in surprise. I would get into my boat and leave this place. If a pesky human started asking me ridiculous questions instead of following my instructions, I would gut him and let the fish feast on his innards. I lowered the shaking man back into the water and slowly let go of his throat. Fortunately, you are about to leave on your travels, which makes me happy and prevents me from even thinking about disemboweling anyone.
Yes, mistress, of course, I was just leaving. Great talking to you. Glad to be of help.
He skipped quickly through the water and jumped on the back of my horse. He gave a quick wave and then kicked the animal forward into a trot that led him southward through the grove of pine trees. The river was already taking the canoe downstream, so I couldn't be sure that the bard followed my orders. Even if the man failed, it would still be difficult for anyone to find me. The letter I left Rodiata would throw them off. The tracks I laid in all directions would confuse